Welcome back, everybody. This is Rick Pettigrew. Coming up, our four top news stories from this past week of Archaeologica. Send us feedback on the Archaeology Channel Facebook page or post a message on our social networking site, ArchaeoSeek. Traces of blood indicate that ancient Mongolian metal cauldrons were used in ancient times to make blood sausage, which is still popular there today. Examination of 25 skeletons of warrior monks from a medieval Spanish castle reveals that one of them was a woman. Humongous rock art symbols along the Orinoco River in South America are proposed to be highly visible boundary markers. And a new study suggests that sea henge and its companion wooden feature on the coast of Britain were intended to reverse a sudden climatic cooling phase 4,000 years ago. Thanks to everyone for supporting our subscription platform, Heritage Broadcasting Service, available at heritagetac.org. We now have hundreds of titles you can binge upon on Roku. Please help us spread the word. Again, that link is heritagetac.org. Our tour program, TAC Tours, will continue in 2024 with our tour of the many eye-catching civilizations spanning thousands of years in northern Peru. Space is still available now, but it will fill up. The link to our tour program is at archaeologychannel.org/tours. And now here's Laura Kennedy with the audio news from Archaeologica. We hope you find this to be a valuable part of your day.
Welcome to the audio news from Archaeologica. I'm Laura Kennedy, and these are the headlines in archaeological and historical news for the week of June 2nd through the 9th, 2024. We begin this week in northern Mongolia, where archaeologists have repeatedly uncovered metal cauldrons from the Bronze Age. As reported by the University of Basel, Mongolian nomads used these cauldrons to collect animal blood to make blood sausage. It's very likely that they were also used for fermenting yak milk. These cauldrons are found across the Eurasian steppe, but their purpose was unknown. In 2019, herders in northern Mongolia found a variety of artifacts, including two bronze cauldrons. A research team led by Dr. Siobhan Wilkin from the University of Basel conducted extensive protein analyses on the cauldrons. Radiocarbon dating shows that the cauldrons were in use 2,700 years ago during the Late Bronze Age. The researchers found remains of blood, primarily from sheep and goats. According to Dr. Brian Miller from the University of Michigan, historical accounts of the steppe dwellers assert that they drank blood regularly. This study provides new insights into how they incorporated blood into their diet. The blood was likely collected in the cauldrons as animals were being slaughtered. Similar practices exist in Mongolia today. The combination of these practices and reliable historical accounts suggests that the processing of blood is a very ancient part of Mongolian culture. The cauldrons also contain traces of milk, especially from domestic cattle and yaks. This is not surprising to researchers, as the practice of dairy production in this region is over 5,000 years old. According to Dr. Wilkin, this also shows that yaks were domesticated and used for milk production much earlier than previously thought. It's possible the milk was fermented in the cauldrons in order to preserve it as yogurt or to use it in making blood sausage. This study helps uncover more about the diversity of ancient culinary methods. Furthermore, museums around the world hold thousands of bronze vessels. These vessels offer opportunities for further research into ancient cooking techniques. Next, we move to Guadalajara, Spain, where archaeologists exhumed 25 warrior skeletons from a castle. One of the skeletons belonged to a woman. As reported by Heritage Daily, researchers from the Universitat Rovira I Virgili and the Max Planck Institute studied the remains of 25 individuals buried between the 12th and 15th centuries in the castle at Zaritas de los Canes. The skeletons belonged to warrior monks from the Order of Calatrava, the first Castilian military order. Researchers were able to determine the monks' diet, lifestyle, and cause of death. 23 of the warriors likely died in battle. Across the remains, researcher Carme Rissek noticed wounds consistent with those of warriors, such as lesions on the upper part of the skull, the cheeks, and the inner part of the pelvis. Surprisingly, when studying the bone proportions of the remains, Rissik identified one of the skeletons as female. The woman's injuries indicated that she participated and died in battle. She may have died similarly to the men, and it's likely that she wore some type of armor or chainmail. However, her diet involved less protein, which might indicate a lower social status. Some researchers hypothesized that she was a servant who was ordered to join the knights in battle when necessary. The researchers involved in this study don't think this was the case. The woman's bones showed marks consistent with those of someone who trained with weapons, rather than someone who performed servant work. Analysis indicates that she was around 40, almost 5 feet tall, and neither stocky nor slender. She probably was skilled with a sword. More analysis is needed to determine if the woman did live contemporaneously with the other knights. This study belonged to the Mon Bones Project, which uses a multidisciplinary approach to examine aspects of life in monasteries from the 14th to 19th centuries. It appeared as an article in Nature. For our third story, we turn to the Orinoco River in Venezuela and Colombia, where researchers have uncovered new insights into the world's largest rock engravings. As reported by Newsweek and in their study published in Nature, researchers propose that these prehistoric petroglyphs may have been intended to mark territorial boundaries. Jose Oliver from the University College London Institute of Archaeology started a research project in 2015 to understand this region's history, especially during the pre-Columbian occupation. Out of more than 100 sites in the region, the team used drones to map out over a dozen rock art sites considered monumental. These sites include engravings of human figures and giant Amazonian centipedes. However, the largest engravings depict snakes. The most impressive engraving is a snake that measures 141 feet, found at the Cerro Pintado site in Venezuela. According to archaeologist Philip Reiris of Bournemouth University, the monumental rock art might come from the intense interactions and contact between the different indigenous groups during the pre-Columbian period. The rock art may have served the purpose of marking identity and territory. The engravings would have warned outsiders about whose territory they had entered or marked the presence of a friendly group. The engravings probably communicated across a wide range of people from diverse groups and cultures. For example, snakes are generally viewed as a threat. The engraving of a snake could have served as a warning. The rock art along this river is unmatched in terms of size and number. Researchers are only just beginning to understand the cultural landscape of the pre-Columbian period. These petroglyphs contribute fundamentally to the understanding of the region's cultural record. As regional tourism expands every year, the need to protect these sites similarly increases. Many more rock art sites are out there to discover, respect, and preserve. Finally, we head to the English coast in the county of Norfolk, where archaeologists are studying the intentions behind a prehistoric circular wood monument referred to as Seahenge. As reported by Heritage Daily, Seahenge, also called Holm 1, was built around 2049 BC. Another timber circle nearby, known as Holm 2, was built at the same time. They are the only known British Neolithic monuments that were built simultaneously. Holm 1 is a round structure where 55 small oak trunks encircle an upturned tree root. The monument was built originally in an area protected from the sea by mudflats and sand dunes. The swampiness of the area created a layer of peat that covered the site and protected the wood from decay. Over time, sea level rose, and the site has now shifted to the coast. Archaeologists have also examined Holm 2. It's a much bigger monument that uses two concentric timber circles to border a pit lined with a wickerwork enclosure. The pit holds two oak logs. Prior interpretations suggested that Holm 1 and Holm 2 were erected together as burial markers or for use in sky burials. A recent study published in GeoJournal compares these two sites. Study author Dr. David Nance has proposed another interpretation. He suggests that the monuments were built for rituals to extend the summer. 4,000 years ago, the monuments were built during a period of severe winters and decreased atmospheric temperatures. This climatic shift put a lot of stress on early coastal societies. The dating of the timbers from Seahenge shows it was felled in spring, and researchers have considered it likely that the uprights were aligned with sunrise on the summer solstice. Folklore may also play a part in the construction of these two monuments. The form of Holm One imitates the two winter dwellings of the cuckoo bird in British and Irish folklore. The cuckoo would stop singing on the summer solstice and return to the other world with summer. In the interpretation offered by Dr. Nance, the circular structure is meant to mimic a pen to keep the cuckoo from leaving, and in that way, extend the summer. This interpretation also suggests that Holm Two is associated with the legends of sacred kings in Iron Age Ireland and Northern Britain. During times of hardship, they were sacrificed to appease the goddess Venus. According to Dr. Nance, the evidence suggests that the kings were sacrificed every 8 years at Samhain, now known as Halloween, in sync with the 8-year cycle of Venus. Holm Two is proposed to have held the coffin of one of these sacrificial kings, with the enclosure oriented towards sunrise on Samhain in the year 2049 BC, again in hopes of extending the summer and alleviating the effects of the suddenly cooler climate. The study thus suggests that the monuments had different functions, but were both constructed in hopes of ending the unusually cold weather. We expect this will not be the final word on that subject. That wraps up the news for this week. For more stories and daily news updates, visit Archaeologica on the World Wide Web at archaeologica.org, where all the news is history. Also, be sure to check out our subscription platform, Heritage Broadcasting Service, at heritagetac.org. I'm Laura Kennedy, and I'll see you next week.
This has been the audio news from Archaeologica, presented by the Archaeology Channel. Be sure to check back with us next week for our next edition. You can spread the word about the audio news by clicking on the Share This link on our audio news webpage, or just by telling your friends. Thanks very much for stopping by.